Like Anna, she closed the door behind her. I'm running out of room. I spent most of my days walking around the city, getting to know it again. I went to the old Colombian bakery, but it wasn't there anymore. In its place was a 99-cent store where everything cost more than 99 cents. I went by the tailor shop where I used to get my pants taken in, but there was a bank. You needed a card just to open the door. I walked for hours, down one side of Broadway and up the other. Where there had been a watch repair man, there was a video store. Where there had been a flower market, there was a store for video games. Where there had been a butcher, there was sushi. What's sushi? And what happens to all of the broken watches? I spent hours at the dog run on the side of the Natural History Museum. A pit bull, a Labrador, a golden retriever. I was the only person without a dog. I thought and thought, how could I be close to Oscar from far away? How could I be fair to you and fair to your mother and fair to myself? I wanted to carry the closet door with me so I could always look at him through the keyhole. I did the next best thing. I learned his life from a distance, when he went to school, when he came home, where his friends lived, what stores he liked to go to. I followed him all over the city, but I didn't betray your mother because I never let him know I was there. I thought it could go on like that forever, and yet here I am. Once again, I was proven wrong. I don't remember when the strangeness of it first occurred to me, how much he was out, how many neighborhoods he went to, why I was the only one watching him, how his mother could let him wander so far so alone. Every weekend morning, he left the building with an old man and went knocking on doors around the city. I made a map of where they went, but I couldn't make sense of it. It made no sense. What were they doing? And who was the old man? A teacher? A replacement for a missing grandfather? And why did they stay for only a few minutes at each apartment? Were they selling something? Collecting information? And what did his grandmother know? Was I the only one worried about him? After they left one house on Staten Island, I waited around and knocked on the door. "I can't believe it," the woman said. "Another visitor." "I'm sorry," I wrote. "I don't speak. That was my grandson, Oscar, who just left. Could you tell me what he was doing here?" The woman told me, "What a strange family you are." I thought, "Family we are." "I just got off the phone with his mother," I wrote. "Why was he here?" She said, "For the key." I asked, "What key?" She said, "For the lock." "What lock? Don't you know?" For 8 months I followed him and talked to the people he talked to. I tried to learn about him as he tried to learn about you. He was trying to find you, just as you tried to find me. It broke my heart into more pieces than my heart was made of. Why can't people say what they mean at the time? One afternoon, I followed him downtown. We sat across from each other on the subway. The old man looked at me. Was I staring? Was I reaching my arms out in front of me? Did he know that I should have been the one sitting next to Oscar? They went into a coffee store. On the way back, I lost them. It happened all the time. It's hard to stay close without making yourself known, and I wouldn't betray her. When I got back to the Upper West Side, I went into a bookstore. I couldn't go to the apartment yet. I needed time to think. At the end of the aisle, I saw a man who I thought might be Simon Goldberg. He was also in the children's section. The more I looked at him, the more unsure I was, the more I wanted it to be him. Had he gone to work instead of to his death? My hands shook against the change in my pockets. I tried not to stare. I tried not to reach my arms out in front of me. Could it be, did he recognize me? He'd written, "It is my great hope that our paths, however long and winding, will cross again." 50 years later, he wore the same thick glasses. I'd never seen a whiter shirt. He had a hard time letting go of books. I went up to him. "I don't speak," I wrote. "I'm sorry." He wrapped his arms around me and squeezed. I could feel his heart beating against my heart. They were trying to beat in unison. Without saying a word, he turned around and rushed away from me, out of the store, into the street. I'm almost sure it wasn't him. I want an infinitely long blank book and the rest of time. The next day, Oscar and the old man went to the Empire State Building. I waited for them on the street. I kept looking up, trying to see him. My neck was burning. Was he looking down at me? Were we sharing something without either of us knowing it? After an hour, the elevator doors opened and the old man came out. Was he going to leave Oscar up there, so high up, so alone? Who would keep him safe? I hated him. I started to write something. He came up to me and grabbed me by the collar. "Listen," he said, "I don't know who you are, but I've seen you following us, and I don't like it, not a bit. This is the only time I'm going to tell you to stay away." My book had fallen to the floor, so I couldn't say anything. "If I ever see you again, anywhere near that boy..." I pointed at the floor. He let go of my collar. I picked up the book and wrote, "I'm Oscar's grandfather. I don't speak. I'm sorry." "His grandfather?" I flipped back and pointed at what I'd been writing. "Where is he?" "Oscar doesn't have a grandfather." I pointed at the page. "He's walking down the stairs." I quickly explained everything as best I could. My handwriting was becoming illegible. He said, "Oscar wouldn't lie to me," I wrote. "He didn't lie. He doesn't know." The old man took a necklace from under his shirt and looked at it. The pendant was a compass. He said, "Oscar is my friend. I have to tell him. He's my only grandson. Please don't." "You're the one who should be going around with him." "I have been." "And what about his mother?" "What about his mother?" We heard Oscar singing from around the corner. His voice was getting louder. The old man said, "He's a good boy," and walked away. I went straight home. The apartment was empty. I thought about packing my bags. I thought about jumping out a window. I sat on the bed and thought. I thought about you. What kind of food did you like? What was your favorite song? Who was the first girl you kissed, and where, and how? I'm running out of room. I want an infinitely long blank book and forever. I don't know how much time passed. It didn't matter. I'd lost all of my reasons to keep track. Someone rang the bell. I didn't get up. I didn't care who it was. I wanted to be alone on the other side of the window. I heard the door open and I heard his voice, my reason. "Grandma?" He was in the apartment. It was just the two of us, grandfather and grandson. I heard him going from room to room, moving things, opening and closing. What was he looking for? Why was he always looking? He came to my door. "Grandma?" I didn't want to betray her. I turned off the lights. What was I so afraid of? "Grandma?" He started crying. My grandson was crying. "Please, I really need help. If you're in there, please come out." I turned on the light. Why wasn't I more afraid? "Please." I opened the door and we faced each other. I faced myself. "Are you the renter?" I went back into the room and got this daybook from the closet. I brought it to him and wrote, "I don't speak, I'm sorry." I was so grateful to have him looking at me. He asked me who I was. I didn't know what to tell him. I invited him into the room. He asked me if I was a stranger. I didn't know what to tell him. He was still crying. I didn't know how to hold him. "I'm running out of room." I brought him over to the bed. He sat down. I didn't ask him any questions or tell him what I already knew. We didn't talk about unimportant things. We didn't become friends. I could have been anyone. He began at the beginning. The vase, the key, Brooklyn, Queens. I knew the lines by heart. Poor child, telling everything to a stranger. I wanted to build walls around him. I wanted to separate inside from outside. I wanted to give him an infinitely long blank book and the rest of time. He told me how he'd just gone up to the top of the Empire State Building, how his friend had told him he was finished. It wasn't what I'd wanted. But if it was necessary to bring my grandson face to face with me, it was worth it. Anything would have been. I wanted to touch him, to tell him that even if everyone left everyone, I would never leave him. He talked and talked. His words fell through him, trying to find the floor of his sadness. "My dad," he said. "My dad." He ran across the street and came back with a phone. "These are his last words. Message 5, 10:22 a.m. It's Dad. It's Dad. Help. It's Dad. Know if... hear any... this I'm... hello? You hear me? We... to the... roof. Everything okay? Fine. Soon. Sorry. Hear me. Much happens. Remember. The message was cut off. You sounded so calm. You didn't sound like someone who was about to die. I wish we could have sat across a table and talked about nothing for hours. I wish we could have wasted time. I want an infinitely blank book and the rest of time. I told Oscar it was best not to let his grandma know we'd met. He didn't ask why. I wonder what he knew. I told him if he ever wanted to talk to me, he could throw pebbles at the guest room window and I would come down to meet him on the corner. I was afraid I'd never get to see him again, to see him seeing me. That night was the first time your mother and I made love since I returned, and the last time we ever made love. It didn't feel like the last time. I'd kissed Anna for the last time, seen my parents for the last time, spoken for the last time. Why didn't I learn to treat everything like it was the last time? My greatest regret is how much I believed in the future. She said, "I want to show you something." She led me to the second bedroom. Her hand was squeezing yes. She opened the door and pointed at the bed. "That's where he used to sleep." I touched the sheets. I lowered myself to the floor and smelled the pillow. "I wanted anything of you that I could have. I wanted dust," she said. "Years and years ago. 30 years. I lay on the bed. I wanted to feel what you felt. I wanted to tell you everything." She lay next to me. She asked, "Do you believe in heaven and hell?" I held up my right hand. "Neither do I," she said. "I think after you live, it's like before you lived." Her hand was open. I put yes into it. She closed her fingers around mine. She said, "Think of all the things that haven't been born yet. All the babies. Some never will be born. Is that sad?" I didn't know if it was sad. All the parents that would never meet. All the miscarriages. I closed my eyes. She said, "A few days before the bombing, my father took me out to the shed. He gave me a sip of whiskey and let me try his pipe. It made me feel so adult, so special. He asked me what I knew about sex. I coughed and coughed. He laughed and laughed and became serious. He asked if I knew how to pack a suitcase, and if I knew never to accept the first offer, and if I could start a fire if I had to. I loved my father very much. I loved him very, very much, but I never found a way to tell him. I turned my head to the side. I rested it on her shoulder. She put her hand on my cheek, just like my mother used to. Everything she did reminded me of someone else. "It's a shame," she said, "that life is so precious." I turned onto my side and put my arm around her. I'm running out of room. My eyes were closed, and I kissed her. Her lips were my mother's lips, and Anna's lips, and your lips. I didn't know how to be with her and be with her. "It makes us worry so much," she said, unbuttoning her shirt. I unbuttoned mine. She took off her pants. I took off mine. "We worry so much." I touched her and touched everyone. "It's all we do." We made love for the last time. I was with her and with everyone. When she got up to go to the bathroom, there was blood on the sheets. I went back to the guest room to sleep. There are so many things you'll never know. The next morning, I was awoken by a tapping on the window. I told your mother I was going for a walk. She didn't ask anything. What did she know? Why did she let me out of her sight? Oscar was waiting for me under the street lamp. He said, "I want to dig up his grave."
A simple solution to an impossible problem. The day after the renter and I dug up Dad's grave, I went to Mr. Black's apartment. I felt like he deserved to know what happened, even if he wasn't actually a part of it. But when I knocked, the person who answered wasn't him. "Can I help you?" a woman asked. Her glasses were hanging from a chain around her neck, and she was holding a folder with lots of paper coming out of it. "You're not Mr. Black." "Mr. Black? Mr. Black who lives here? Where is he?" "I'm sorry, I don't know." "Is he okay?" "I assume so, I don't know." "Who are you?" "I'm a realtor." "What's that?" "I'm selling the apartment." "Why?" "I suppose the owner wants to sell it. I'm just covering today." "Covering?" "The realtor who represents this property is sick." "Do you know how I can find the owner?" "I'm sorry, I don't." "He was my friend." "She told me they're coming by sometime this morning to take everything away." "Who's they?" "They, I don't know, contractors, garbage men, they." "Not moving men." "I don't know." "They're throwing his things away?" "Or selling them." If I'd been incredibly rich, I would have bought everything, even if I just had to put it in storage. I told her, "Well, I left something in the apartment. It's something of mine, so they can't sell it or give it away. I'm going to get it, excuse me." I went to the index of biographies. I knew I couldn't save the whole thing, obviously, but there was something I needed. I pulled out the B drawer and flipped through the cards. I found Mr. Black's. I knew it was the right thing to do, so I took it out and put it in the pouch of my overalls. But then, even though I'd gotten what I wanted, I went to the S drawer. Antonin Scalia, G.L. Scarborough, Lord Leslie George Scarman, Maurice Sev, Ann Wilson Schaefe, Jack Warner Schaefer, Iris Sharmell, Robert Haven Schaufler, Barry Scheck, Johann Scheffler, Jean de Chalandre, and then I saw it. Shell. At first, I was relieved, because I felt like everything I'd done had been worth it, because I'd made Dad into a great man who was biographically significant and would be remembered. But then I examined the card, and I saw that it wasn't Dad. It said, "Oscar Schell, son." I wish I'd known that I wasn't going to see Mr. Black again when we shook hands that afternoon. I wouldn't have let go. Or I would have forced him to keep searching with me. Or I would have told him about how Dad called when I was home. But I didn't know. Just like I didn't know it was the last time Dad would ever tuck me in. Because you never know. So when he said, "I'm finished, I hope you understand," I said, "I understand." Even though I didn't understand. I never went to find him on the observation deck of the Empire State Building, because I was happier believing he was there than finding out for sure. I'd kept looking for the lock after he told me he was finished, but it wasn't the same. I went to Far Rockaway and Borum Hill and Long Island City. I went to Dumbo and Spanish Harlem and the Meatpacking District. I went to Flatbush and Tudor City and Little Italy. I went to Bedford-Stuyvesant and Inwood and Red Hook. I don't know if it was because Mr. Black wasn't with me anymore, or because I'd been spending so much time making plans with the renter to dig up Dad's grave, or just because I'd been looking for so long without finding anything, but I no longer felt like I was moving in the direction of Dad. I'm not even sure I believed in the lock anymore. The last Black I visited was Peter. He lived in Sugar Hill, which is in Hamilton Heights, which is in Harlem. A man was sitting on the stoop when I walked up to the house. He had a little baby on his knee, who he was talking to, even though babies don't understand language, obviously. "Are you Peter Black?"
"Who's asking?"
"Oscar Schell." He padded the step, which meant I could sit next to him if I wanted, which I thought was nice, but I wanted to stand. "That's your baby?"
"Yes."
"Can I pet her?"
"Him."
"Can I pet him?"
"Sure," he said.
I couldn't believe how soft his head was, and how little his eyes were, and his fingers. "He's very vulnerable," I said.
"He is," Peter said, "but we keep him pretty safe."
"Does he eat normal food?"
"Not yet. Just milk for now."
"Does he cry a lot?"
"I'd say so. Definitely feels like a lot."
"But babies don't get sad, right? He's just hungry or something."
"We'll never know."
I liked watching the baby make fists. I wondered if he could have thoughts, or if he was more like a non-human animal.
"Do you want to hold him?"
"I don't think that's a very good idea."
"Why not?"
"I don't know how to hold a baby."
"If you want to, I'll show you. It's easy."
"Okay."
"Why don't you sit down?" he said. "Here you go. Now, put one of your hands under here, like that. Good. Now put the other around his head. That's right. You can kind of hold it against your chest. Right. Like that. You've got it. Just like that. He's as happy as can be."
"This is good?"
"You're doing great."
"What's his name?"
"Peter."
"I thought that was your name."
"We're both Peter."
It made me wonder for the first time why I wasn't named after Dad, although I didn't wonder about the renter's name being Thomas. I said, "Hi, Peter. I'll protect you." When I got home that afternoon, after 8 months of searching New York, I was exhausted and frustrated and pessimistic, even though what I wanted to be was happy. I went up to my laboratory, but I didn't feel like performing any experiments. I didn't feel like playing the tambourine, or spoiling Buckminster, or arranging my collections, or looking through stuff that happened to me. Mom and Ron were hanging out in the family room, even though he wasn't part of our family. I went to the kitchen to get some dehydrated ice cream. I looked over at the telephone, the new phone. It looked back at me. Whenever it would ring, I'd scream, "The phone's ringing!" because I didn't want to touch it. I didn't even want to be in the same room with it. I pressed the play button, which I hadn't done since the worst day, and that was on the old phone. Message 1. Saturday, 11:52 a.m.
Hi, this is a message for Oscar Schell. Oscar, this is Abby Black. You were just over at my apartment asking about the key. I wasn't completely honest with you, and I think I might be able to help. Please give... And then the message was cut off. Abby was the second Black I had gone to 8 months before. She lived in the narrowest house in New York. I told her she was pretty. She cracked up. I told her she was pretty. She told me I was sweet. She cried when I told her about Elephant ESP. I asked if we could kiss. She didn't say she didn't want to. Her message had been waiting for me for 8 months. Mom? Yes? I'm going out. Okay. I'll be back later. Okay. I don't know when. It could be extremely late. Okay. Why didn't she ask me more? Why didn't she try to stop me, or at least keep me safe? Because it was starting to get dark, and because the streets were crowded, I bumped into a Googleplex people. Who were they? Where were they going? What were they looking for? I wanted to hear their heartbeats, and I wanted them to hear mine. The subway station was just a few blocks from her house, and when I got there, the door was open a little, like she knew I'd be coming, even though she couldn't have, obviously. So why was it open? Hello? Is anyone there? It's Oscar Schell. She came to the door. I was relieved because I hadn't invented her. Do you remember me? Of course I do, Oscar. You've grown. I have? A lot. Inches. I've been so busy searching that I haven't been measuring myself. Come in, she said. I thought you weren't going to call me back. It's been a long time since I left that message. I told her, I'm afraid of the phone. She said, I've thought about you a lot. I said, your message. From months ago? How weren't you honest with me? I told you I didn't know anything about the key.
But you did?
Yes. Well, no, I don't. My husband does.
Why didn't you tell me when we met?
I couldn't.
Why not?
I just couldn't. That's not a real answer. My husband and I had been having a terrible fight. He was my dad. He was my husband. He was murdered. I wanted to hurt him.
Why?
Because he'd hurt me.
Why?
Because people hurt each other. That's what people do.
It's not what I do.
I know.
I spent 8 months looking for what you could have told me in 10 seconds.
I called you right after you left.
You hurt me.
I'm very sorry.
So? I asked. So what about your husband?
She said, he's been looking for you.
He's been looking for me?
Yes.
But I've been looking for him.
He'll explain everything to you. I think you should call him.
I'm angry at you because you weren't honest with me.
I know.
You almost ruined my life.
We were incredibly close. I could smell her breathing. She said, if you want to kiss me, you can.
What?
You asked me that day we met if we could kiss. I said no then, but I'm saying yes now. I'm embarrassed about that day.
There's no reason to be embarrassed. You don't have to let me kiss you just because you feel sorry for me.
Kiss me, she said, and I'll kiss you back. I asked her, What if we just hugged? She held me against her. I started to cry, and I squeezed her as tightly as I could. Her shoulder was getting wet, and I thought, maybe it's true that you can use up all of your tears. Maybe Grandma's right about that. It was nice to think about, because what I wanted was to be empty. And then, out of nowhere, I had a revelation, and the floor disappeared from under me, and I was standing on nothing. I pulled away. Why did your message cut off? Excuse me? The message you left on our phone, it just stops in the middle. Oh, that must have been when your mother picked up. My mom picked up? Yes. And then what?
What do you mean?
Did you talk to her?
For a few minutes.
What did you tell her?
I don't remember.
But you told her that I'd gone to visit you?
Yes, of course. Was I wrong to?
I didn't know if she was wrong to. And I didn't know why Mom hadn't said anything about their conversation or even about the message. The key. You told her about it?
I assumed she already knew.
And my mission? It didn't make any sense. Why hadn't Mom said anything, or done anything, or cared at all? And then, all of a sudden, it made perfect sense. All of a sudden, I understood why, when Mom asked where I was going and I said out, she didn't ask any more questions. She didn't have to, because she knew. It made sense that Ada knew I lived on the Upper West Side, and that Carol had hot cookies waiting when I knocked on her door, and that doorman215@hotmail.com said, "Good luck, Oscar," when I left, even though I was 99% sure I hadn't told him that my name was Oscar. They knew I was coming. Mom had talked to all of them before I had. Even Mr. Black was part of it. He must have known I was going to knock on his door that day because she must have told him. She probably told him to go around with me and keep me company and keep me safe. Did he even really like me? And were all of his amazing stories even true? Were his hearing aids real? The bed that pulled, were the bullets and roses bullets and roses? The whole time, everyone, everything. Probably Grandma knew. Probably even the renter. Was the renter even the renter? My search was a play that Mom had written, and she knew the ending when I was at the beginning. Was your door open because you knew I was coming? She didn't say anything for a few seconds, and then she said, "Yes." "Where's your husband?"
"He's not my husband."
"I don't understand anything."
"He's my ex-husband."
"Where is he?"
"He's at work."
"But it's Sunday night,"
she said. "He does foreign markets."
"What?"
"It's Monday morning in Japan." "There's a young man here to see you," the woman behind the desk said into the phone, and it made me feel so weird to think that he was on the other end of the line, even if I knew I was getting confused about who he was.
"Yes," she said, "a very young man."
Then she said,
"No."
Then she said, "Oscar Schell." Then she said,
"Yes, he says to see you."
"May I ask what this concerns?" she asked me.
"He says his dad," she said into the phone.
Then she said,
"That's what he says."
Then she said,
"Okay,
Then she said to me, "Go down the hallway. His door is the third on the left." There was art that was probably famous on the walls. There were incredibly beautiful views out of the windows, which Dad would have loved. But I didn't look at any of it, and I didn't take any pictures. I'd never been so concentrated in my life because I'd never been closer to the lock. I knocked on the third door on the left, which had a sign on it that said, "William Black." A voice from inside the room said, "Come in." "What can I do for you tonight?" said a man behind a desk. He was about the same age that Dad would have been, or I guess still was if dead people have ages. He had brownish-grayish hair, a short beard, and round brown glasses. For a second, he looked familiar, and I wondered if he was the person I had seen from the Empire State Building through the binocular machine. But then I realized that was impossible because we were at 57th Street, which is north, obviously. There were a bunch of picture frames on his desk. I looked at them quickly to make sure Dad wasn't in any of the pictures. I asked, "Did you know my dad?" He leaned back in his chair and said, "I'm not sure. Who was your dad?" "Thomas Schell." He thought for a minute. I hated how he had to think. "No," he said. "I don't know any Schells."
"New."
"Excuse me?"
"He's dead, so you couldn't know him now."
"I'm sorry to hear that."
"You must have known him, though."
"No, I'm sure I didn't."
"But you must have."
I told him, "I found a little envelope that had your name on it, and I thought maybe it was your wife, who I know is now your ex-wife, but she said she didn't know what it was, and your name is William, and I wasn't anywhere near the W's yet."
"My wife?"
"I went and talked to her."
"Talked to her where?"
"The narrowest townhouse in New York."
"How was she?"
"What do you mean?"
"How did she seem?"
"Sad."
"Sad how?"
"Just sad."
"What was she doing?"
"Nothing, really. She was trying to give me food, even though I told her I wasn't hungry. Someone was in the other room while we talked."
"A man?"
"Yeah."
"You saw him?"
"He passed by the door, but mostly he was yelling from another room."
"He was yelling?"
"Extremely loud."
"What was he yelling?"
"I couldn't hear the words."
"Did he sound intimidating?"
"I don't know what that means."
"Was he scary?"
"What about my dad?"
"When was this?"
8 months ago.
8 months ago?
7 months and 28 days. He cracked up. "What's so hilarious?" He put his face in his hands like he was going to cry, but he didn't. He said,
"That man was me."
"You?"
8 months ago, yeah. I thought you were talking about the other day."
"But he didn't have a beard."
"He grew a beard."
"And he didn't wear glasses." He took off his glasses and said,
"He changed."
I started thinking about the pixels in the image of the falling body and how the closer you looked, the less you could see. "Why were you yelling?"
"Long story."
"I have a long time," I said, because anything that could bring me closer to Dad was something I wanted to know about, even if it would hurt me.
"It's a long, long story."
"Please?" He closed a notebook that was open on his desk and said,
"It's too long a story."
I said, "Don't you think it's so weird that we were in the apartment together 8 months ago and now we're in this office together?" He nodded. "It's weird," I said. "We were incredibly close." He said,
"So what's so special about the envelope?"
"Nothing, exactly. It's what was in the envelope."
"Which was?"
which was this. I pulled the string around my neck and made it so the key to our apartment was on my back, and Dad's key rested on the pouch of my overalls, over Mr. Black's biography, over the Band-Aid, over my heart.
"Can I see that?" he asked.
I took it off of my neck and handed it to him. He examined it and asked,
"Did it say something on the envelope?"
"It said Black." He looked up at me.
"Did you find it in a blue vase?"
"Jose!" He said,
"I can't believe it."
"You can't believe what?"
"This is truly the most amazing thing that's ever happened to me."
"What is?"
"I've spent 2 years trying to find this key."
"But I've spent 8 months trying to find the lock."
"Then we've been looking for each other."
I was finally able to ask the most important question of my life. "What does it open?"
"It opens a safe deposit box."
"Well, what's it got to do with my dad?"
"Your dad?"
"The whole point of the key is that I found it in my dad's closet, and since he's dead, I couldn't ask him what it meant, so I had to find out for myself."
"You found it in his closet?"
"Yes."
"In a tall blue vase?"
I nodded.
"With a label on the bottom?"
"I don't know. I didn't see a label. I don't remember." If I'd been alone, I would have given myself the biggest bruise of my life. I would have turned myself into one big bruise.
"My father passed away about 2 years ago," he said. "He went in for a checkup, and the doctor told him he had 2 months to live. He died 2 months later."
I didn't want to hear about death. It was all anyone talked about, even when no one was actually talking about it.
"I needed to figure out what to do with all of his things. Books, furniture, clothes."
"Didn't you want to keep them?"
"I didn't want any of it."
I thought that was weird, because Dad's things were all I wanted.
"So to make a long story short..."
"You don't have to make a long story short."
"I had an estate sale. I shouldn't have been there. I should have hired someone to take care of it, or I should have given it all away. Instead, I was in the position of telling people that the prices for his belongings weren't negotiable. His wedding suit wasn't negotiable. His sunglasses weren't negotiable. It was one of the worst days of my life, maybe the worst."
"Are you okay?"
"I'm fine. It's been a bad couple of years. My father and I weren't exactly close."
"Do you need a hug?"
"I'll be okay."
"Why not?"
"Why not what?"
"Why weren't you and your dad exactly close?" He said,
"Too long a story."
"Can you please tell me about my dad now?"
"My father wrote letters when he found out about the cancer. He wasn't much of a letter writer before. I don't know if he ever wrote. But he spent his last 2 months writing obsessively, whenever he was awake."
I asked why, but what I really wanted to know was why I started writing letters after Dad died.
"He was trying to say his goodbyes. He wrote to people he barely knew. If he hadn't already been sick, his letters would have been his sickness. I had a business meeting the other day, and in the middle of our conversation, the man asked if I was related to Edmund Black. I told him, yes, he was my father. He said, 'I went to high school with your dad. He wrote me the most amazing letter before he died. 10 pages. I only barely knew him. We hadn't talked in 50 years. It was the most amazing letter I'd ever read.' I asked him if I could see it. He said, 'I don't think it was meant to be shared.' I told him it would mean a lot to me. He said, 'He mentions you in it.' I told him I understood. I looked through my father's Rolodex.
What's that?
Phone book. I called every name. His cousins, his business partners, people I'd never heard of. He'd written to everyone, every single person. Some let me see their letters, others didn't.
What were they like?
The shortest was a single sentence. The longest was a couple dozen pages.
Some of them were almost like little plays.
Others were just questions to the person he was writing to.
What kinds of questions?
Did you know I was in love with you that summer in Norfolk? Will they be taxed for possessions I leave, like the piano? How do light bulbs work?
I could have explained that to him.
Does anyone actually die in his sleep?
Some of his letters were funny. I mean really, really funny. I didn't know he could be so funny. And some were philosophical. He wrote about how happy he was and how sad he was and all the things he wanted to do but never did and all the things he did but didn't want to do.
Didn't he write a letter to you?
He did.
What did it say?
I couldn't read it. Not for a few weeks.
Why not?
It was too painful.
I would have been extremely curious.
My wife, my ex-wife, said I was being crazy not to read it.
That wasn't very understanding of her.
She was right, though. It was crazy. It was unreasonable. I was being childish.
Yeah, but you were his child.
But I was his child. That's right. I'm babbling. To make a long story short...
Don't make it short, I said, because even though I wanted him to tell me about my dad instead of his, I also wanted to make the story as long as I could because I was afraid of its end. He said,
I read it. Maybe I was expecting something confessional, I don't know. Something angry or asking for forgiveness. Something that would make me rethink everything, but it was matter of fact. More of a document than a letter, if that makes sense.
I guess so.
I don't know. Maybe I was wrong to, but I was expecting him to say he was sorry for things. And tell me he loved me. End of life stuff. But there was none of it. He didn't say, I love you. He told me about his will, his life insurance policy, all those horrible business-like things that feel so inappropriate to think about when someone has died.
You were disappointed?
I was angry.
I'm sorry.
No, there's nothing to be sorry for. I thought about it. I thought about it all the time. My father told me where he'd left things and what he wanted taken care of. He was responsible. He was good. It's easy to be emotional. You can always make a scene. Remember me 8 months ago? That was easy.
It didn't sound easy.
It was simple. Highs and lows make you feel that things matter, but they're nothing.
So what's something?
Being reliable is something. Being good.
And what about the key?
At the end of his letter, he wrote, I have something for you. In the blue vase on the shelf in the bedroom is a key. It opens a safe deposit box at our bank. I hope you'll understand why I wanted you to have it.
And what was in it?
I didn't read the note until after I'd sold all of his belongings. I had sold the vase. I sold it to your father.
What? The...
That's why I've been trying to find you.
You met my dad?
Only briefly, but yes.
Do you remember him?
It was just a minute.
But do you remember him?
We chatted a bit.
And?
He was a nice man. I think he could see how hard it was for me to part with those things.
Could you please describe him?
Gosh, I don't really remember much.
Please.
He was maybe 5'10". He had brown hair. He wore glasses.
What kind of glasses?
Thick
glasses. What kind of clothes was he wearing?
A suit, I think.
What suit?
Gray, maybe?
That's true. He wore a gray suit to work. Did he have a gap between his teeth?
I don't remember.
Try.
He said he was on his way home and saw the sign for the sale. He told me that he had an anniversary coming up the next week.
September 14th.
He was going to surprise your mom. The vase was perfect, he said. He said she'd love it.
He was going to surprise her?
He'd made reservations at her favorite restaurant. It was going to be a fancy night out.
The tuxedo. What else did he say?
What else did he say?
Anything.
He had a great laugh. I remember that. It was good of him to laugh and to make me laugh. He was laughing for my sake.
What else?
He had a very discerning eye.
What's that?
He knew what he liked. He knew when he'd found it.
That's true. He had an extremely discerning eye.
I remember watching him hold the vase. He examined the bottom of it and turned it around a number of times. He seemed like a very thoughtful person.
He was incredibly thoughtful. I wished he could remember even more details, like if Dad had unbuttoned his shirt's top button, or if he smelled like shaving, or if he whistled "I am the walrus." Was he holding a New York Times under his arm? Were his lips chapped? Was there a red pen in his pocket?
When the apartment was empty that night, I sat on the floor and read the letter from my father. I read about the vase. I felt that I'd failed him.
But couldn't you go to the bank and tell them you'd lost the key?
I tried that. But they said they didn't have a box under his name. I tried my name, no box. Not under my mother's name or my grandparents' names. It didn't make any sense.
There was nothing the bank people could do?
They were sympathetic, but without the key, I was stuck.
And that's why you needed to find my dad.
I hoped he'd realize that there was a key in the vase and find me. But how could he? We sold my father's apartment, so even if he went back, it would be a dead end. And I was sure he'd just throw the key away if he found it, assuming it was junk. That's what I would have done. And there was no way I could find him. Absolutely no way. I knew nothing about him, not even his name. For a few weeks, I'd go over to the neighborhood on my way home from work, even though it wasn't on my way. It was an hour out of my way. I'd walk around looking for him. I put up a few signs when I realized what had happened. To the man who bought the vase at the estate sale on 75th Street this weekend, please contact. But this was the week after September 11th. There were posters everywhere.
My mom put up posters of him.
What do you mean?
He died in September 11th. That's how he died.
Oh, God. I didn't realize. I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I don't know what to say.
You don't have to say anything.
I didn't see the posters. If I had, well, I don't know what if I had.
You would have been able to find us.
I guess that's right.
I wonder if your posters and my mom's posters were ever close to each other. He said,
wherever I was trying to find him. Uptown, downtown, on the train. I looked in everyone's eyes, but none were his. Once I saw someone I thought might be your father across Broadway in Times Square, but I lost him in the crowd. I saw someone I thought might be him getting into a cab at 23rd Street. I would have called after him, but I didn't know his name.
Thomas.
Thomas. I wish I'd known it then.
He said,
I followed one man around Central Park for more than half an hour. I thought he was your father.
I couldn't figure out why he was walking in such a strange, crisscrossing way. He wasn't getting anywhere. I couldn't figure it out.
Why didn't you stop him?
Eventually I did.
and what happened?
I was wrong. It was someone else.
Did you ask him why he was walking like that?
He'd lost something and was searching the ground for it.
Well, you don't have to look any more, I told him.
He said, I've spent so long looking for this key, it's hard to look at it.
Don't you want to see what he left for you?
I don't think it's a question of wanting.
I asked him, what's it a question of? He said,
I'm so sorry. I know that you're looking for something, too, and I know that this isn't what you're looking for.
It's okay.
For what it's worth, your father seemed like a good man. I only spoke with him for a few minutes, but that was long enough to see that he was good. You were lucky to have a father like that. I'd trade this key for that father.
You shouldn't have to choose.
No, you shouldn't.
We sat there, not saying anything. I examined the pictures on his desk again. All of them were of Abby. He said,
why don't you come with me to the bank?
You're nice, but no thank you.
Are you sure?
It's not that I wasn't curious. I was incredibly curious. It's that I was afraid of getting confused. He said,
what is it?
Nothing.
Are you all right?
I wanted to keep the tears in, but I couldn't. He said,
I'm so, so sorry.
Can I tell you something that I've never told anyone else?
Of course.
On that day, they let us out of school, basically as soon as we got there. They didn't really tell us why, just that something bad had happened. We didn't get it, I guess. Or we didn't get that something bad could happen to us. A lot of parents came to pick up their kids, but since school is only 5 blocks from my apartment, I walked home. My friend told me he was going to call, so I went to the answering machine and the light was beeping. There were 5 messages. They were all from him.
Your friend?
My dad. He covered his mouth with his hand. He just kept saying that he was okay and that everything would be fine and that we shouldn't worry. A tear went down his cheek and rested on his finger. But this is the thing that I've never told anyone. After I listened to the messages, the phone rang. It was 10:22. I looked at the caller ID and saw that it was his cell phone.
Oh, God.
Could you please put your hand on me so I can finish the rest? Of course, he said, and he scooted his chair around his desk and next to me. I couldn't pick up the phone. I just couldn't do it. It rang and rang, and I couldn't move. I wanted to pick it up, but I couldn't. The answering machine went on, and I heard my own voice. Hi, you've reached the Shell residence. Here is today's fact of the day. It's so cold in Yakutia, which is in Siberia, that breath instantly freezes with a crackling noise that they call the whispering of the stars. On extremely cold days, the towns are covered in a fog caused by the breath of humans and animals. Please leave a message. There was a beep. Then I heard Dad's voice.
Are you there? Are you there? Are you there?
He needed me, and I couldn't pick up. I just couldn't pick up. I just couldn't. Are you there? He asked 11 times. I know, because I've counted. It's one more than I can count on my fingers. Why did he keep asking? Was he
waiting for someone to come home? And why didn't he say, anyone? Is anyone there?